come on LinkedIn and say, yes, but the motivation is not. If the motivation is high and the friction is low, or if the motivation is that much, the friction doesn't matter. It does.
Hi, my name is Romo Santiago, and I'm the founder of Experiment Nation. On today's episode, Gerda interviews media monks Juliana Jackson. They speak about the hard truths about working and optimizing for mobile, how web and apps should work together, and how much it costs to build a mobile app, and all sorts of other things. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Thanks for joining, everyone watching this. I'm Gerda. I'm here today with Juliana, who is an absolute A-B testing influencer.
Shut up, don't say that. This is horrible.
A guru, a marketing guru. Goddess.
I need to put that. Oh, no, see, you're playing dangerous games because I have no filter. But yes, I am an A-B testing influencer. Last time I checked.
And we're going to talk about mobile apps. And I wanted to do this because my own experience as an optimizer is mostly on websites and web apps.
Yeah.
And you are obviously now super into apps, mobile apps, and talking a lot about that tracking strategy, everything. And you recently did this blog article that was really good about the team fragmentation and how even within mobile app teams, like, people can't get it together to kind of work together and all that. And I think that if you take a step back with larger companies who have web experiences and apps, it's even worse, right? Like, the web teams are so far removed from what is happening within apps and vice versa. So I thought it would be interesting to kind of ask you questions as a web optimizer about how apps actually work and just basically ask a lot of dumb questions about how to bridge the gap there.
None of that shit is dumb, but okay.
Okay, cool. So in case somebody doesn't know you, can you intro like, can you intro yourself? How did you get into apps? And what it is that you do these days?
Gerda, if I knew how to answer to that question, I would be probably in a very good space of my life. I'm Juliana. I just do stuff on the internet. That's kind of what I don't like. A lot of people might think because I post on social media that I'm like this super extroverted person. I'm so not. Like, everyone that kind of like knows me, like in person or like spend some time with me, knows that I'm like very introverted. So like when people ask me to talk about myself, I'm like, oh, shit. But no, I'm actually, if there's one thing that I can say about myself, I'm a salesperson, bro. Like, I'm honest. Like, I started in sales. That's how I think we met when I was at OmniConvert, how I met you and Ryan. And I was sales vendor side, like, for the best part of my career. I started in sales. But I kind of, like, bridged sales with product back in 2016 when I had my first product job as a product owner for Cluster CS, a Romanian software company. It was so awesome. And that was, like, kind of the first time that I had to optimize it. I wasn't even using the word optimization in 2014. It was just starting to be a thing thanks to, you know, smarter people. So I was always kind of trying to figure out how, back then I was saying, how can you make it easy for people on the internet? You know, very simple, very pragmatic. And I've been in product for a long time, going from marketing to sales, product owner, manager. Like, I'm a salesperson, a product person. That's kind of like the thing that I did the most. But when I was at CXL in 2020-ish, something like that, I took all the courses, because what the f- can you do? You know, you're at CXL, you have to take the courses. And I remember Pep was telling me all the time that I should take the technical marketing mini degree. I actually blame Pep for a lot of stuff, like good stuff. And I ended up doing the technical marketing mini degree, which is one of my favorites. I didn't like the CRO one that much. Sorry. I love some courses from it. But it's just like, for me, I never wanted to call myself a CRO. And Romil and Shiva know about this stuff. I don't think I'm a CRO person. I think I'm a product person that has, you know, a lot of experience in different things. So I'm like CRO adjacent. But yeah, when I was at CXL, I took the technical marketing mini degree. And I remember Simo saying that you need to join the conversation. You need to know how to speak with developers, but also you need to know how to speak with marketers and data people and so on. So I was like, I did everything, but I don't know how to implement data collection. Like, I got into this panic mode. Did I need it? No. But I was like, I need to do this. I need to learn how to, you know, set up a tag on a website. I need to know what is a tracking code? What's a web browser? Like, and you know, I wrote the technical marketing mini degree afterwards myself. So I left CXO and I said, I'm going to become a digital analyst, which I did in a way. I ended up at Media Monks and I did it for 6 months. And then I was like, you know, this is cool. But can we just like focus on making it easier for people on the internet? Like I kind of get back to the same predicament I was in 2016. So that's a very long-winded answer to tell you that I don't know what I'm doing yet, but I am a salesperson. I'm a product person that has experience with data and optimization and different things. But yeah, I don't consider myself an A/B testing influencer. Not at all. Like I don't, if I cannot not touch A/B testing, I gladly will do it.
Mm-hmm. But are you exclusively in mobile apps now, or are you still kind of dabble with all this other stuff?
It's actually cool because nobody asked me this stuff. So when, how I ended up in mobile apps, because I'm a product person, in my agency, we have two pillars. We actually have like 10 pillars, but we have two pillars that work together. It's platforms, which build apps and build websites, and like we are the devs. And then we have another pillar called data. In the data team, I have a small startup in this 8,000 people agency. I have a small startup, which is called Digital Experience Optimization. I don't name it CRO or experimentation, because, you know, like everyone likes to name it differently.
But it's dead anyways.
It's dead. Yeah, exactly. It's Kiro now. But
this is Roma Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week, we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch. Now back to the episode.
When I joined Media Monks, I was put on a client that is a retailer and also like a restaurant chain that has web and app. And as an excited person that read case studies about this, you know, this specific brand, I was like, oh my God, you know, I did it. But it's a very big difference from the US part of the brand and the one in Europe and how they're building stuff. So we were building their apps, we're building their websites. So when I ended up on this client, I was just doing GA4 implementation, like very basic shit. And time passed. And obviously knowing how I am very curious, I said like, well, you know, this part of the customer journey in the app doesn't work that well. Cause I was testing actually. So when you test tracking on the app, you have to download the app, the UAT version from the App Center or whatever you're using. And then you shake your phone to have tweaks. And then you can see in real time how the events are popping on your screen based on what you click. So, you know, I was like, well, this doesn't seem right. Like, we should do this. We should do this. So I end up telling my manager, like, hey, can we do a UX evaluation of the app? She was like, yeah, sure. So I do the UX evaluation. I was like, can we do also some, you know, user testing and review analysis? Can we do that? So from that, it ended up being like a whole practice. So I started working mm-hmm. with other clients with mobile apps. Like I don't work 100% exclusively with mobile apps, but because I have product experience, I kind of like gravitated towards those because I'm more pragmatic. Like I'm not the type of person that is going to come and yell at you because the CRM or the MDE is not something like I couldn't give less about that. I just want us to have the mindset of testing and to do better for the clients. So sometimes for the users and the clients, and sometimes that doesn't, show as how good you are with math. So that's another long-winded answer. Like you should have known that when you asked me to do this, I will give you
so the no question, I love it. Yeah, it's good.
I'm also like unfiltered because it's late for me, so my ADHD right now is like but yeah, so I work mostly exclusively with apps, but I also do web. I have a lot of like mm-hmm. e-commerce because, you know, I love e-commerce and I worked in that space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember when you used to call yourself the CLV lady.
I wasn't calling myself, people were calling me that, and then I took it because it was cool. It was better than like you know, some other times. Like, I took it.
Fun times.
Yeah. Embraced it.
We should bring the CLB lady back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The resurrection of the CLB lady. Nice. 2024. So do you have any, like, favorite industries or type of apps that you like to work with? Or categories?
I like food apps a lot. You know why? Because it's like, it's when you're ordering food, it's very primary needs that you have. Like, there's no need for all the, I mean, yes, you can make some interesting experience, but, like, it's a very, I posted this on LinkedIn a while ago. If your app says that you're showing me parking spots around me, I want to open the app and find my parking spot. Like, I feel like food apps, because it's a primary need of feeding yourself, right? It's not too much. You don't have outcomes. You don't do jobs to be done to feed yourself, right? The core experience is very important. And I am not too much of a big fan of new feature development when it comes to mobile apps, because the core experience is much more important. Like, if you're selling that you're doing something, your app needs to do that stuff. So I love to optimize for that amazing core experience. So I like food apps. I also like gaming apps, but with gaming, it's a whole different, like, food is very primal needs, but gaming, man, like, I remember we had the...
I mean, it's also primal, just getting dopamine, basically.
I know, but do you know how many data points are in the game? Like, I had the... we had the client that is a cookie, besides among other things, and they had the game. And one of my colleagues that was supposed to tag it, I was like, he was telling me, Juliana, do you know how many journeys there are? I was like, yes, that's so f***ing amazing. So I do like gaming apps. I want to test on dating apps as well. I think dating apps are more interesting in terms of what you can do from an experimentation perspective. But yeah, like, I primarily like very basic stuff that are focused on core experience. Because again, like, if there's one thing that I can say that I am, is I'm very pragmatic. So, yeah. I don't know if I answered that. But food apps, probably also because, you know, it's not easy to look like this. It's just like to put better. You want to put food in everything.
I love food. It's so good.
Oh, yeah.
But like, that was one of my tracking questions for you, actually. Like, let's say the gaming apps compared to food apps, right? So there's no in-app purchase. And you just said that there's so many touch points and journeys.
There's
and all
a lot
that,
of
so...
in-app purchases in games. Oh my God. Depends on the game, but okay, I'll shut up.
Okay. Okay, but let's say an app that doesn't have an in-app purchase and it's mostly about engagement. So how would you approach, like, tracking that or the success of the app?
Yeah. So obviously it's going to be engagement metrics, user engagement, open, like... basic thing is like this. You download the app, that's a metric, app downloads. You remove the app, which means deleting it, but it also doesn't mean uninstall it, like two different things. Then you have obviously daily active users, you know, very product metrics, daily active users, monthly active users, average revenue per user, like very simple product. Like if it's exactly like a software company, if like you would sell SaaS, it's kind of the same principle, even if you don't have mobile order and payment features in the app. So you are focused on engagement, you're focused on functionality, error prevention, or how do you recover from error. Error is like so underrated. Like that's one of like the most prolific data points in an app, errors, like the messaging from the errors, the recovery. What happens after people see specific things in the app? Like, do they adopt them? Do they turn them off? So kind of like this thing should be in all apps. I think in all apps, you should look at engagement and purchase is kind of like one of those, you know, like if you do this part good, it's back to that core experience, then people might purchase or, you know, refer a friend or do other, you know, engagement that you can put in an app. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. I read Hacking Growth recently, and that's like a marketing book from 2017, like 7 years ago. And obviously 7 years is like eons in digital marketing.
Yeah.
But it said that at the time, at least, Apple users need to opt in to receive notifications, but Android users are opted in by default. Is that like still true?
Yes.
And how does the whole like opting into notifications even influence doing experiments and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, it does. So basically here, Apple, as you know, has their own approach to privacy. And they are, in their own way, their own interpretation of privacy, right? So they're trying to give the user control over how they want to be engaged with, right? So if you want to, you know, be notified by certain things, you have to opt in for those things. So Apple is kind of like doing it in its own way. On Android, it's a bit different. I have an Android phone. Like, for me, I don't mind it, but I do turn off notifications manually afterwards. It's not the end of the world, but Apple does their own thing and has their own approach, and they're always like very user-centric when it comes to anything. And of course, that poses a lot of my hand is very big. That poses a lot of issues for tracking. And for instance, I remember one of these releases, maybe it was 14 or 15, one of the releases where you couldn't, I think it was 14.5, when you couldn't track too much anymore. If people opted out completely, you couldn't see that data. So you were missing like 25-35% of the data from the Apple Store of downloads and, uninstalls and sales. So what we did at that point, we actually tried to estimate how much 35% would be to have at least some sort of directional shit. And don't imagine I did that. Mm-hmm. People smarter than me did that. But that's how we dealt with. And yes, it can impact, of course, A-B testing and personalization, because it's not that the audience is smaller, but it might be not representative necessarily. Because if you don't want notifications, it's clearly, you know, that you don't can be f***ed with or arsed with. So I would track if people turn on notifications. Like, that's an interesting data point, because that shows more interest and intent and stuff like that. But it does, yeah, affect, of course, the sample size. But again, that's not my biggest problem. My biggest problem is it representative? Because you can have a load of data and, you know, is it useful? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting that they haven't changed that then in the past, like, 7 years or
as
whatever.
As far as I know, they didn't, but I might be wrong. I should have researched this, but I didn't have time. I might be wrong. But as far as I know, it's mm-hmm. you have to, like, when you install anything, you can choose the way you want to be bothered or not with it. But again, like, this is very on brand for them, and everything that they're doing is to keep people locked into their ecosystem, and they have kind of their own ways to interpret privacy and engagement and stuff like that. Like, even now, for instance, with PWA, initially they said that PWA's progressive web apps, which are like they're like an app type that you can download on your home screen and you can use it, but it's actually a web page. Mm-hmm. It's not a native app. So they were saying initially, because of the Digital Marketing Act, they will stop the PWA in Europe, because for what DMA wanted was basically to let developers build PWAs to work with other browser engines like Brave or Chrome and so on. And that's disaster for Apple, because they want people to use WebKit and Safari, their browser engine, because they want to keep people in their ecosystem. It's not because they're like evil giants. It's because it's very expensive and very risky to allow people to come with make-believe, you know, like apps that work on, I don't know, Opera or Brave or whatnot, and put them in the ecosystem where they can put at risk the security of their users. So as far as I know, this didn't change, because it's very on brand with the notification. It's very on brand for Apple, but who knows? I didn't have time to check, to be honest, if this changed.
Okay. But if you look at like iOS and Android experiences in your work, like, do you see like massive differences in the user journey, or how do you even like approach the strategy and research? Do you have to do like two sets basically, or how do you approach that?
This is such a good question. The experience on iOS and Android is very different, because the users of Android and iOS are very different. There are different types of people. So what we did on a client was actually do the research and surveys and interviews to understand what's the Android user versus the iOS users in the context of that client. Like, we actually did surveys and interviews. And basically what we noticed is that people that are on iOS are mostly, funny enough, they were younger people. They were people that were much more focused on lifestyle and fashion and photography, like more, I don't know, whimsical people. That we found those types of people also on Android, but people on Android are kind of like more focused on functionality, focused on making sure things are working fine, which is funny because the reviews and ratings on Android were worse than the ones on iOS. I don't know how is that possible, but basically on iOS, people were rating the app higher. And then on Android, it was lower all the time because this one app that I'm thinking about, the experience was a bit different. One fun analysis we did is like when you purchase something through the app, you can customize it. So customization is one of the biggest levers to mobile order and payment, because it shows obviously intent, but it also shows that, you know, you want to actually go to the end and do the purchase. But the funny part is on iOS, it was taking people between 8 and 15 screens to customize that specific product. And on Android, it was just like 5 to 8. And we were asking like, what the fuck, why? But then we realized that people on iOS were like more indecisive because the experience was different. So we're still working to do some A-B testing, because then is when you actually want to A-B test. Like, that's an interesting challenge, like, to do. It's not kind of like, what I do appreciate about app, and I want to say this here, recorded then on the record, is that I do appreciate that people in the teams are not as, choosing my words, precious. Precious is the word. What I do like about mobile apps is that people in teams and developers and, you know, the whole squad of product are not as precious about being so to the T with statistical significance and calculating every little shit that you take. It's mostly about you prototype a feature, you flag it, you do feature flags. It doesn't have crashes, it doesn't have rage clicks, it doesn't have, you know, like uninstalls. That's enough. Like, we're looking more at signals than at if a test won or lost, if that makes sense. Like, it's kind of like, it's exactly like in SaaS, right? You're focused mostly on did we correct the experience in a positive way? Do we, because we don't look at revenue, we don't look at COV. I know, like, you know, hard for Juliana to say that. Like, we don't have those type of goals. The goals that we have, which that's why I really like this space, is mostly like, did people uninstall the app less? Did we have such a big drop-off since we fixed the onboarding or since we fixed the customization? And people are like, no, actually, it does better. Oh, shit, it did? Well, then let's open the feature in another market. Let's open it in another market. Let's assess. The thing is that to do A-B testing in mobile apps, you need an app release for each test. That's a lot of technical depth.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask you about that, because you just posted about, like, if you do any implementation changes, you need to basically release a new version of the app, right?
Yes.
Like,
developers don't,
that's
really
crazy.
Like that. Yeah.
Right. And then, but you said it's like not always necessary or something?
Yeah,
or
so for tracking.
No.
Yeah, for tracking, it's not always necessary, because you can still do some things if it's a PWA or a web app or a hybrid app. There might be some things you can do in the tracking tool, in the interface, GA4 or Amplitude, whatever you're using. But to do like actual tracking measurement stuff, you need to do it in the app code base. So developers need to do it. You write it nicely, the measurement plan, and then you give it to the people to do it. So for A-B testing, it's the same. Like, for each A-B test that you do, you need to do an app release, and there is feature flagging, or you do also a pre and post. So you enable the feature. Like, not everyone is doing, like, so, like, to the T A-B testing. Like, it's foreign. Like, the way you do it on web, when you have to see, oh, my God, how many weeks do I need to run it? Do I look at 80% confidence or 85 or 90? Like, that, I'm sure if people will listen to it, like, oh, my God. No, that's a catastrophe. That's blasphemy. I use my calculator. Where is it? Calculate. No, in the real world, you don't do all that. It's basically, again, like, the goal. I'm not saying all teams are like that, but what I've experienced, this is me, right? I'm not speaking for people that work at a... I'm gonna shut up. But that's my experience, and I stick to it. people that work in this space are more interested in functionality, experience, making sure the shit doesn't crash, making sure you don't have low performance, because performance is a bit different for engineers and developers than it is for us and marketers. Like, they couldn't give a shit about, I don't know, some sort of campaign and promotion. They care if the user can log in, log out, can be in the app doesn't crash, you don't have bugs. Like, the battles that you fight are a bit different. So I found it very hard to sell experimentation and, like, beautifying things and, you know, random things that you would do in web app, because it doesn't matter for them that much. Their biggest...
So it's more like robust or...
It's very different. And there is no such... Mm-hmm. Like, when I wrote that article that you mentioned and you participated in, I liked Jim Gordon said this, not all silos are built equally. And some silos are actually centers of excellence on their own and not in the classical way of how we in the CRO community are defining centers of excellence. Sometimes, basically, you just have to let people do what they do and try to come and support versus bulldoze. With, if I would go right now to some of the developers that I work with and tell them about, I'm sorry, but we need to run this for 9 weeks. This feature needs to be in the market for 9 weeks to get confidence and to get, you know, power to the test. And they'll be like, what? Why? And then it's like, oh, because that's how, you know, people on LinkedIn write that we should run tests. It's like, I cannot be, how can I be an A/B testing influencer this year if I don't do that? I'm sorry, I'm terrible. See, why did you invite me? This is what I, you invite me, I will talk shit. That's, sorry, Romeo. You can delete this whole part.
So one of the differences in terms of teams or team like structure that seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like in web, you know, you have web developers and they very rarely do like the tracking implementation. Like, yeah, sometimes they help or whatever, but usually we as CROs kind of put together the strategy for tracking and implement it as well.
Yeah.
So in mobile, it seems that there isn't like that type of position. Like, the developers are the main people that do that work, right?
Yes, but they don't know how to do it unless you tell them how to. So it's like,
okay, so strategy is still,
yeah, you need it. You need it. Like, you're the thing that connects everything together. Like, you do need it. Of course, they don't know what's the latest, you know, best practices on a GA4 data layer or some stuff like that. So you need to build these measurement plans. Specifically tell them, like, what's the event, what's the purpose of the event, where should it fire, why should it fire, what are the parameters, what's the value of the parameters. You do a measurement plan, you give it to them, and then they write it in the code base, and that's how it's done. So you can't, again, there's some tools and configurations, and obviously it depends, right? But primarily you do need the developer to do tracking in native mobile apps, because it's a difference. If you do web apps, it's the same. You can do it too. I can do it. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not the best idea for me to do it. I'm looking for my water. I'm sorry. I'm still here.
No worries. So I'm going to throw like a case study or use case at you from a web experimenter. So let's say I'm working on a website where one of the main goals is to get people to download the app. And then basically I'm running tests on landing pages to get them to do that and whatever. And then I want to see if those people that converted through the test, like, what are they doing in the app? Is it even possible? And how do I combine kind of the web engagement and all that together with the experience in the app? Like, is that now simpler with Firebase and GA4? Because like some years ago, it was like so difficult still.
I haven't tested that, but if your GA4 implementation is correct, you're tracking web and app, and you use the audiences in GA4 that contain app data to run tests if you're using GA4 with an A/B testing tool, and most people do that by now. So if you collect user ID and client ID and you have the audience built in GA4 that you're using for the A/B testing, which contains web and app, it all depends on how, it's kind of like your data quality depends on your data collection mechanism, to quote Simo from years ago, and I heard him say that. So that was very short.
Okay. Well, yeah, I wasn't expecting it to be that easy, but yeah, like
I mean,
many years
easy,
ago we were
easy, you know how easy it is. It's a
There's always problems.
Yeah, but in theory,
whatever. So.
In theory, if you do proper data collection in GA4, your audiences live in GA4. You have in GA4 data from your ads, from your Firebase, from Search Console. It's kind of the same shit. If you I urge people to collect user ID. That is very important to have user ID and client ID, depending what you're using in your test. Then it's kind of like just another audience in GA4, if of course everything is fine. I feel like it was too short, but that's all I have.
Overly optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying, man. It's like the end of the day for me. I'm trying to be cool right now. Yeah.
Nice. So we touched on SaaS and what are kind of like the similarities there, but basically everyone's saying that, you know, the SaaS app development is being sped up because of AI and whatever. Are you seeing that in the mobile app industry as well, that people are releasing stuff faster or whatever, or the development is still like too different for that?
No, I mean, given that in, you know, the development sits in Media Monks, and you know, I talk to these guys, like, yeah, we use AI for experiences, improving the experience, improving, you know, the delivery of content or copy or whatever, but we don't to the actual aspect of app development and writing code. No, it's still people doing it, thankfully.
Okay. And like, this is probably an impossible question, but like, if somebody wants to build a mobile app, how much does it cost? Like, do you have any ranges, or how does it compare to like web development or anything like that?
Damn, bro. Yeah, I mean, it depends, right? Do you want to build an app? It's like, let's imagine a Chrome extension. You can build a Chrome extension on your own, and if you know how to code, or you can figure it out. So with apps, for instance, if you build an app that just shows you the weather, you need the interface, you need a, I don't know, IP to location type of thing to track, you know, the weather, some privacy stuff, and you can probably do it for, I don't know, 20K, 15K, if it's a basic app. But if you want to build a video game, a food app, ordering app, if you want to build a Uber app or a booking app or whatever, then clearly, you know, you need more developers, you need, and developer resource is very expensive, as you know. So you need developers, you need UI, UX, you need data. It's obviously, but if you just want to build a basic app, I mean, you also have to think about how you're going to host your app into App Store and Play Store, because, you know, it's not free.
Yeah, let's talk about the app stores.
Yeah.
So basically, you have to pay them for your in-app purchases. My amazing Googling skills said that it's like 30%.
Yeah, I checked and to make sure, yeah.
And so does that only apply to like digital products, or like, let's say you have like an e-com app, do they then take something from those purchases, or how does that work?
It's for digital services and for goods per se too. It's very similar to the Shopify model. So when you build an app on Shopify store, you need to pay, I think when I did it last time with the reveal, when I was at Valentine at OmniConvert, it was 30% that you need to pay. So a lot of people, not us, we were behaving, but a lot of people create like to try to game the system, would build like a proxy to send you to another website so the transaction doesn't happen in that context. So, but that's not legal anymore with Shopify. I checked some months ago
because
somebody was at
because me. The first kind of example that came to my mind was Kindle, where, you know, they show you the books in the app, but you can't buy them. Like, they make you go
on
the website. I know,
it's fucking annoying on Amazon. I hate it. I don't know how they're doing this. Because, like, I cannot read any more books, like, at all. Like, I can only read on my phone. Because of my ADHD, I have no patience. And I hate it when they did that, like, 2 years ago, probably, they started doing that. Because in the beginning, you could buy the phones from the app. Like, I bought so many, even now, like, I have books that I bought because I haven't bought shit ever since. So I think the last one I was buying was Gucci's main, don't ask, Gucci Mane's. I read other shit, like, his, no, Rick Ross's biography. That's the last book I bought.
Nice.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'm weird. Did you expect that? Probably not.
No, that was a surprise.
So, there you go. I have even the Britney Spears memoir, too.
Oh, did you read that already?
I have Elon Musk's one. No, I have the sample. Because my behavior, the reason why I'm opening the app to show you, is that you can only get the sample on the phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I read that, I get satisfied because it's a lot. So I don't go and buy because, like, nobody trying to go to the website to do the purchase. I want to do it on my phone. So they might think, I wouldn't recommend doing this from any point of view. Like, yes, of course, it sucks when you give 25% or 15% or something like that. What I know, because I ask people, is that now there's like, how do you say it in English? I forgot the English word. It's like you can make a certain amount of money. Oh, it's capped. That's the word.
Oh, okay.
So it's a cap right now on how much you make. And if you're under a certain like threshold, you don't have to pay. 30% is less or something like that. Like, there were some adjustments, and I actually asked one of the developers to prepare for this interview. And he told me this, and then I said, can you give me a link? And he was like, I don't have time, but I still love them. But it's I know there are the one of the developers said that they made these changes because a lot of people were trying to game the system just like they're doing with Kindle. But I wouldn't recommend doing this because if you interrupt the experience that people have on the app, especially if they're reading, come on, bro. Like, I want to read something. I read the sample. I'm so excited. Like, yes, for sure, people will come on LinkedIn and say, yes, but the motivation is not. If the motivation is high and the friction is low. Or if the motivation is that much, the friction doesn't matter. It does. When I was a CXO, me and Kyle actually were thinking about the cancellation process and we tried to simplify it and make it easier because we realized that if people want to come back, they will come back. But if you make it hard for people to cancel their subscription, they're going to be so full of resentment, they might never come back. So it's kind of like a long-term type of loss.
Wanted to go back to the e-com apps too, because like really big e-coms like Zara, ASOS, whatever, they have, you know, regular web mobile experience, but they have the purchasing and apps as well, right? So do you have any like advice on how big a company has to be in terms of when is it the right time to launch a mobile native app alongside your regular purchasing experience or whatever?
Just look at your traffic sources. And if you have 90% of people coming from mobile to your website, and look at what is the revenue from desktop versus mobile. If mobile trumps it, it's time for you to move
then
on.
Then you should.
Yeah.
You should already start like investing.
Yeah. Or just the start with the PWA, start with the web app first and test the waters and then build a native app. Like, you don't have to start, the native apps are more expensive, but you can build a PWA or a web app or a hybrid app. But I think this is also in general a lot of traffic to websites recently from all the websites I've seen, and God knows I've seen so many websites in the last 1 year and a half. Most of it is like 70-80% mobile traffic.
Yeah, especially in e-com, we're seeing the same thing, and oftentimes we don't even like test on desktop anymore.
Yeah,
because if the 90% is on mobile, it doesn't make sense to invest in testing on desktop.
Yes.
Okay.
No, I agree with you, and you shouldn't test on web before your visitors are on mobile. It makes no sense. It's like,
but I think it's still like a hard balance if you're saying that, you know, even a simple app build costs like 20K, and you know, if you have a pretty and probably for an e-com it's even more, right? So it's like, you know, when is the right time or what type of revenue do you have to have?
Yeah, I mean, of course, if you're just starting out and you're just hitting your million or 2 million and in e-commerce, that's nothing considering how much it costs to, you know, have the business online and stuff. Probably not, but it depends on the goals of the company, how, you know, much money you're making, how many customers, like traffic, it's a sign. Conversion on mobile, it's a sign. People accessing your website mostly from mobile, it's a sign. So you would do a bit of research, you would ask people like, hey, you know, what do you think about an app? What do you think about this? So it's a natural extension to the experience, because I'm going to share this link with you after, like, the mobile app report from 2024. And mobile apps is a $6 trillion type of industry.
Yeah, I saw that in your blog post, actually. I was like, what? That's a crazy number.
But it's where most people, and that research is so good. Like, I don't really look at research that much, but that one is so well done. And it has like a lot of, you know, it's statistically significant, I guess. So like, if everyone uses their phones all the time, like if you advertise for them to them on Instagram, on Facebook, and who the f*** uses Facebook or Instagram on desktop?
Yeah, my auntie. Good point.
My auntie. She's playing those
boomers.
Games. Exactly. But if your market is, I don't know. Also, an interesting thing that I want to share here that I learned recently, it's who are your buyers, right? Because if most of your buyers are people that are Gen Z or like close to millennials, the classic advertising and sales channels don't work anymore. Like right now, for a client, we're actually building a Roblox game because most of their you know, users and potential buyers are actually teenagers, 20-year-olds that play Roblox. And you would think that Roblox is just a game for kids. So my son plays Roblox. Well, one of my kids plays Roblox. Oh, there's like grown-ass people on Roblox. And Allianz actually had a great one. They built a Roblox game where they were teaching kids how to insure their goods, because in Roblox you get a lot of like drops in game. Mm-hmm. So then people trade those for other types of items. So a lot of people were scammed in the game. My son too, like he was scammed of his items because he was doing like this type of exchange. No. Yeah. So Allianz thought, how can I teach younger people, younger generation about the importance of insurances? So they created the Roblox game with this like, superheroes, with superheroes in the game. And it was basically educating kids on how important it is to insure your goods before you exchange them or you put them on the internet. And I thought that was really awesome. I was like, whoa, that's so more and more people create in-game experiences because that's the only channel that they can reach out to the younger generations. And my son, like he's 12, right? But he sees shit in Roblox or in Fortnite and he says, I don't know, I want the new Travis Scott, you know, shoes or stuff like that. So that's another, like, I feel, and I'm taking all responsibility for this. It's like, yes, you know, like, it's still good to, you know, do the common sense things on web and app, for sure. As you see, I'm not saying best practices, because yikes. But what are your channels? Like, that's interesting. Like, how do you A-B test that? How do you push a video game? And you get people from the video game, like, how do you, you know, quantify that? Like, that's an interesting way of, for me, like, it's something that's really obsessing me lately. And that's what we're trying right now to do with the client, to create like a skin in Roblox that you can buy and try to educate people. So that's kind of like where my interest is lately, especially if you want to reach certain audiences. So that's also very important. And coming back to your question, figure out, you know, like, if you make enough, if you're profitable enough and all your traffic and it's coming from mobile, do a bit of research in demographics, also like interests and stuff like that, to see what are ways where you can reach these people that are not so, you know, classic. Like, I'm very curious to see like an industry report on desktop versus mobile use for a lot of stuff. Cause like, and that's why I get a bit like this when I see best practices for web that show desktop. You know, like, man, like,
yeah.
Of course, if you're a bank, for sure. If I'm gonna, listen, so this is the mentality for me as a millennial. If I need to do some bank shit that I cannot do in the bank app, I gotta go on desktop. So when I go on the desktop is when I'm booking flights, when I'm doing some like important shit that actually requires a lot of mental effort, right? I'm not going to shop on my desktop for shoes or lipstick or, I don't know, random shit. But if I need to book a flight, if I need to do some financial shit or like an application or shit like that, then it's when I'm going to use the desktop. Anything else?
Yeah, it's weird. It's like almost desktop has this serious adult bureaucratic vibe. I know, or something.
I just realized this talking to you. Like, you go on the desktop when it's real.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, another, I guess, optimization question for you was about the early on triggers in app user experience. And like, I've read that a bunch of companies, when they, you know, start an app, they kind of amp up the triggers in the beginning to show that there's a lot of engagement, and then that like puts up the stats, but then that actually ends up backfiring because people get so annoyed. So it's like, do you have any advice on how to balance the short-term engagement with long-term retention and usage and all that kind of stuff?
Marketing response, it definitely, you know, depends on the app. But so like, we can take an example. If it's a food app, of course, you know, you want to send notifications about sales and promos and the sandwich of the day and shit like that. And I think those are fine. But if your app is an e-commerce app, let's say it's, I don't know, Adidas. No, not Adidas. I can talk about though. Let's say it's Zara. I can talk about Zara. Let's say Zara. Oh, actually, I know one that's annoying. About You. So About You, it's a fashion app. Bro, they kill me with the notifications. Like, I do love to browse because I do buy. I'm a heavy purchaser of clothes. Like, I buy random shit. I do a lot of retail therapy. But you have to, like, pick your battles with notifications and getting people in the app. Like, you have to ask yourself, like, is this worth stopping this person from their day to share this type of notification? You got to, like, be strategic, I guess, with the type of stuff you want to get people to open the app. You're also always going to, when you just build an app, you can always, you look at first open, which is the first time they open the app after they download it. And then you can look at very basic metrics like 7 days activity, 14 days, 30 days. And yes, you can focus much. I think if my advice would be to focus more on onboarding people into the app versus trying to constantly get them into the app, because I always go back to this, like, you want to build a habit. Like, if you don't build a habit from the first use of the app, it's very hard to get people to use it again. So, like, to fashion brands, like, if you build an app, you have an app and you get somebody that downloads it from the first time, show them around, show them where, like, you know, they can go to see promos and whatnot. Like, do a nice, you know, like, onboarding with, you know, great, like, screens, and show them where shit is. And then I would ask, and I actually did this, you ask people, like, what do you want us to notify you about? So then people choose what they want to see. So if you kind of like build an experience that the user is in control in the app, which it's very important since it's your phone, like, there's nothing more private than your phone, in my opinion. Like, you know, it's the most private thing you have. I would say and advise people to let the user have the sensation that they're in control and let them pick what they want to see, but focus on the onboarding experience. So important. So many people like underinvest into things like change password or login. You would be surprised how many people bounce and uninstall apps because they just cannot even log in into the app. Like, you cannot even log in, or to see a welcome screen where it tells you click here to see this shit or click here to see this. Notifications don't really work, you know, like,
yeah, even like basic kind of flows where even like on web, if you sign up for something, the like confirmation link is like broken or something that hasn't been.
And the cognitive dissonance is like,
yeah,
I hate it so much. Yeah,
totally. Well, I feel like I could talk to you forever, but Romil probably doesn't want us to have like a 3-hour podcast.
You'll get bored at some point. Oh, man.
So Yeah, any last thoughts you want to share about like web and apps working together? What should people pay attention to? What's the big problem we need to solve?
I would say that there's no competition between web and app, and it shouldn't be. It should be a cohesive journey, because people will use both types of, you know, channels to reach to your brand. I would say that I prefer apps and product in general, because I always felt that in the community, in the experimentation community, sometimes there's so much focus on literature and science papers and all these best practices things, and like I do see their place in time and purpose, but I do appreciate that in this context of mobile apps and devs and product, things are more pragmatic, and they're more like, a lot of people say that they're using all this literature to make better decisions, but actually it's kind of like gatekeeping a lot of people from trying to A/B test or trying to run just a feature flag. I feel like if you want to help the industry and the community and push it further, people should gatekeep less and stop being so precious about every little thing, because people get scared and turned off because of that. So that's why I felt like I found my place in mobile and product, because people don't make me feel stupid because I haven't read some science paper on Google Scholar about statistical significance. So yeah, that's kind of my last words.
Nice. Well, I think, a lot of CROs and web people also can learn a lot from like how app people do things and how to coexist, especially in big organizations.
Yes.
So I really appreciate your time. Thanks for answering all my questions.
I had fun. It was fun.
Yeah, me too. So good luck, Romil, editing this. And I'm sure we'll talk soon again.
Put this Optimizely is the best tool I ever used.
Love Optimizely.
Yeah, both of us, please.
This is Romil Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week, we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch. Now back to the episode.